5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Happy holidays, sweet babies. Today, I have with us an actual practicing wizard. A lot of you are familiar with Vermin Supreme. Maybe you've seen him during protests, or maybe you've heard his many promises, the possibility that he is going to give ponies to everyone on the planet. Or maybe you've recognized that he's more than just a chaos agent at protests, but he's actually a peacemaker, that somehow the presence of this wizardly being with a boot on his head has the tendency to diffuse situations, to create a comedic element in zones where there is the great possibility for violence. And if you're somebody who is into Discordianism or anarchism, then you surely have recognized that Vermin Supreme is a brilliant and powerful magician. At least that was my thinking before I got to talk to him, and I was thrilled to find out that my assessment was accurate. Vermin Supreme, he is awesome. And if you've wondered about what anarchy actually is, many people think anarchy is throwing a rock through a Starbucks. But if you've wondered what anarchy really is, then you're really going to love this episode. And to me, Vermin Supreme represents the Christmas spirit. Because in the same way that it is hilarious and beautiful and wonderful to suddenly witness the wild boot-crowned Vermin Supreme at a serious protest, what's more beautiful than the appearance of the Son of God in a place where there's a lot of donkey shit? The message here is that it doesn't matter if you militarize the police, or it doesn't matter if you try to scare us with your omnipresent panopticon of surveillance cameras and bullshit laws. There's always going to be a kind of benevolent chaos that appears in that space between the security force and the people. And that person is Vermin Supreme, a mystical time-traveling miscreant. And if you're someone who made the incorrect observation that it's just a crazy person with a boot on his head, get ready, because your opinion is about to change. Vermin Supreme is here with us. We're going to jump right into that, but first this. It's the holidays, and I like holiday music now that I'm a dad, but there's no way that I'm going to spend any amount of time assembling a holiday music tape. It's just not going to happen. But it is mind-blowing to me that I could just say to the robot thing living in my house, "Hey Alexa, play Christmas music," and suddenly Christmas music just starts playing. That will never stop being cool to me. "Hey Alexa, order 50 rolls of toilet paper." If you had an Alexa, you would order toilet paper for you. How cool is that? But we're not talking about Amazon, we're talking about Amazon Music. And if you haven't tried Amazon Music before, for a limited time, you can get your first 3 months of Amazon Music Unlimited for free. That's access to more than 70 million songs on demand and ad-free. Play the songs you want, when you want, free for 3 months. You can play Mariah on repeat long into 2021 if that's your jam. And if you just want to stream free, Amazon Music's got you covered. Download the app to get access to millions of podcast episodes, including this one here at no charge, plus thousands of music stations and top playlists. You can listen at home or wherever you are. Your holidays will be merrier with fun, festive tunes. Remember, for a limited time, new subscribers can get 3 months of Amazon Music Unlimited for free. Go to amazon.com/trussell. That's amazon.com/trussell, T-R-U-S-S-E-L-L, to get your first 3 months of Amazon Music free. Starts at $7.99 a month after. New subscribers only. Terms apply. This offer expires January 11th, 2021. Thank you, Amazon Music. Well, what I hoped would never happen, happened. I'm really sorry to say that one of the DTFH listeners whose family has asked that I not name them was devoured by some combination of a squirrel swarm and a pleth of raccoons, as it's called, which is the accumulation of an angry group of raccoons. It's called a pleth. I guess he's listening to the podcast, and he was walking on a hike or something, and we only know what his girlfriend has said, and she's in a psychiatric hospital because what she saw drove her insane. She just kept saying the raccoons, they went for his eyes. There's nothing left. There's bones, just bones, cell phone, some ragged clothes. Look, I'm not saying that the reason these animal attacks are happening to people who listen to the DTFH but aren't subscribed to the Patreon are because of something I'm doing. I don't have the ability to do that. And I certainly don't know magicians or wizards who I could pay to do dark spells that would cause people not subscribed to my Patreon to get attacked by small, generally considered cute animals, rabbits, gophers, groundhogs. A lot of groundhog bites are happening, I'm hearing. I would never do that to you. I don't care if you subscribe to the Patreon or not. I want you to be healthy. That's my number one thing, which is why I'm advising you to subscribe to my Patreon, patreon.com/DTFH. You're going to get commercial-free episodes. You're going to get access to weekly meditations and family gatherings and book clubs. But more than that, you're going to get that guarantee, what I like to call the trussell guarantee, that you're not going to get ripped apart by a swarm of adorable creatures. I know that won't happen because the only thing these people where these attacks have been happening have in common is that they listen to my podcast, but they don't subscribe to the Patreon. It's so weird. I'm working on it. Once we figure out the cause, I'll let you know. But in the meantime, as a kind of band-aid of protection, head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. You're going to get a Discord link so that you could hang out with your one true family. And you're going to get access to hours and hours of extra content that's just floating there right now. That's patreon.com/DTFH. Friends, today's guest is an activist, a philosopher, a chaos lord, a presidential candidate, and a worker of peace. He is a notorious pony promising genius. You can find everything out that you need to find out about Vermin Supreme by going to verminsupreme.com. But first, welcome him to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Vermin Supreme, everybody.
Mr. Trussell, I'd like to I'd like to welcome you to the show. Vermin Supreme, where we like to talk to people who are doing various things and have things to promote. And so welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And I understand that you are a podcaster of some sort, or some note, rather, I assume would be more accurate.
I have a podcast.
And you also are a cartoon? Am I to understand that correctly?
They turned me into a cartoon last year.
So cool. How does that feel?
It's liberating. It's liberating to you know, you would think it, you might become more entrenched in reality by having multiple bodies, but it's nice to have a lighter, more colorful version of me.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's like one of the beautiful things about me and what I've developed is that there's a fictional side a mile wide.
Yeah.
And I have become so much bigger than my meat sack, if you will. I mean, I'm just like, here I am, some guy, and we're just talking. But on the internet, it's I'm a meme. And that's a very strange thing to be. It's almost about giving up a fair amount of control over the messaging, because anybody can use me in pretty much any way, shape, or form that they like, whether I agree with it or disagree with it.
How do you deal with that? Do you find yourself surrendering to that reality, or have you attempted to control the narrative?
Well, obviously, I have my own dank meme stash. I've got my own social media team. I've got a number of regular memesters that have been memeing me, making memes with and about me, like, forever.
Yeah.
And so usually they're pretty clever, and they're generally positive. And I think that's, you know, one of the blessings that, you know, when I became a meme, it was for doing something fun and entertaining and informative and educational and satirical, whereas like some people become memes for doing terrible things. And it's like, hey, look, it's that meme who kicked the dog. Hey, get him!
That's right. You can get memed into hell. It's like you get splattered all over in all these various memes for better or for worse. And yeah, you have a glorious, beautiful fountain of wonderful, hilarious memes. And
yes, I mean, as a rule, it's beautiful. And that's the wonderful thing about what I have become, is that it becomes an audience participation project, where like and the fact that I offer the opportunity to pretend, because, you know, grown-ups don't pretend a lot. You know, they sort of lose that maybe not ability, but the desire or the need to fully pretend silly stuff sometimes. And I believe that I am a conduit for that opportunity. You know, when I'm talking about ponies and asking people, what are you going to name your pony? The people want to pretend right along, and they want to talk about zombie preparedness and the time travel and all these sort of sci-fi tropes that I've tapped into. It's just so wonderful because it's an open-ended improvisational project, and it's just not something that occurs on the internet, because, you know, I'm a real person. And I've been doing it in real meat world for a lot longer than the digital world. But it's always been this very playful, improvisational, playing off people who come up to want to know what's going on, or with the other politicians, or with the police, or the authority figures, or all these people. And yes, it is because I have discovered this magical boot.
Are you a wizard?
Which I would have to say yes. In fact, I'm a registered Time Lord and Wizard with the Universal Life Church, because those are actual titles that are available, and I snatched them up. And I believe that there is certainly a lot to be said in terms of wizard-like altering reality, changing reality, changing people's perceptions of reality. You know, I have a real affinity for the Discordians and the Surrealists and the Dadaists.
Sure.
And the people that believe that, you know, you can offer, you know, deeper truths and revelations to people by using shocking juxtapositions. And in my own way, in my own sense, I use a lot of humor and absurdity. And you know, the beautiful thing, you know, people ask me, you know, Vermin, what's with the Buddha on your head? And I will, my stock response to the media is generally, it stands for all that is good in America. The ability to wear a boot on your head if you want to. Or sometimes I'll tell them the boot is a pile of shit and that they are the flies that buzz around.
Yeah. I thought you for the first time, I thought that my first thought was a wizard has gotten in to this meeting. But then I didn't see it as a boot. I saw it as a wizard's cap. And then it was later that I realized that's a boot. Now, I'm not saying there's a difference between the two. A hat's a hat. I mean, you know, you could say a shoe is a hat on your foot.
A hat.
And
it's a signifier. You know, it signifies to people, to onlookers, that what they might be subject to may not be linear in nature. So it's a little bit of a warning. Obviously, if it's in a crowd, it's this magnetic attraction because it's the tallest thing in the room and people are drawn to it and authority figures are drawn to it because it's not right. I mean, the beautiful thing for me about it is if you take a photograph of me wearing the boot in any place, any time, any situation, any crowd of people, and you show that photograph to a kid and you say to that kid, hey, kid, what's wrong with this picture? And it's just it's obvious. It's unmistakable. It's undeniable.
Yeah.
It's wrong. The man has a boot on his head. It's not correct. Yeah. It's not right. It's insane. And so just that and this crazy combination of the platform planks of, you know, the ponies and the toothbrushing and it just has such resonance with so many people that it has allowed me to communicate with millions and interface with media across the flat earth. And it's allowed me.
I think it's hollow. I guess it could be flat and hollow.
I thought you were talking about my boot for a moment. And of course that's another, controversy. Some sort of little alien being up there within the boot, somehow controlling my thoughts, emotion, and movement? Or is the boot itself the actual alien that has somehow attached itself to my head to control me? It's very hard to say. I'm not really sure.
If you had to name the kind of magic you practice, and I'm sorry to even ask you to name it if you haven't named it, or to try to limit you or control it in some way by even asking you to name it, but if you had to, at least in this moment, what would you call it?
I suppose the chaos magic, even though I don't really fully understand it in its totally or even partially, but it seems like it's in that vein, that Discordian vein, where we're trying to create the chaos. And I think being able to alter, you know, that reality. And I've discovered, I've been able to use that in different situations, in very high stakes situations sometimes, particularly really tense demonstrations in the past.
You're not safe. You don't seem safe. You put yourself in danger. I've watched you and I've thought to myself, as many of us have, that, you know, before maybe some people, before they think of wizard, they think activist. But I don't know if there's a difference between those two things. But yes, definitely. You seem to put yourself in danger. You know,
and a big part of that is just understanding the situation, having a real solid situational awareness, because I've been in those environments so many times, and having an understanding of how they work and how they operate and how one thing can lead to the other and the tit for the tat and the escalation. And, you know, between the cops and the protesters, there's this no person's land, it and it's a vacuum, and it will something will fill it eventually. It could be an agitator. It could be a cop taking a cheap shot. It could be a demonstrator getting emotionally wrought up and escalating things.
Wow.
But I have discovered that by entering that space and using my bullhorn and my calm demeanor and humor and jokes, that you could, I can sort of short circuit it. I can rearrange the flow of events.
I've watched that happen. I'm sorry to cut you off. I've watched it happen. It's the strangest thing to see. The police officers, unmoved by legitimately upset, passionate people, but you're there, and somehow you get in there. You cross it. They can't. They smile. The state smiles, but then yeah. Also the protesters smile. It's some kind of. I know. I've seen it. It's real magic. It's. I mean, if any of y'all listening want to see what magic looks like, it's. I don't know of another way to put it.
Psyops.
But to me, and maybe it's too much. And it's old age and lots of acid. But when I see a politician, I also think to myself, well, that's some form of magic there too. And when I see you show up, then I start thinking, well, there's some kind of wizard battle happening here. You've decided to show up to distort, transform, alchemize the mundane reality that they seem intent on keeping us all fixated in.
That, yes, that too. And I believe that my critique, such as it is, I mean, I've been flogging the damn mandatory toothbrushing laws as a warning of a totalitarian fascist police state, you know, for 30 years. And
yes,
it's sort of freaky to see all these things come to pass. It has allowed me to be considerably more aggressive in a lot of ways. If I came at some of these politicians, like I like to do, going up to Ted Cruz and Chris Christie's or Clinton's or whatever, and, you know, if I wasn't using my humor and had the same energy, it would be very scary.
Yes.
And I don't, people would be frightened by it.
Yes.
But because I come on with the absurdity and the nonsense, if you will, it alone changes the reality. It forces them into a different way of interacting. And I've discovered that by using these wacky, you know, questions, I get a more interesting response. You know, when I asked John McCain where he stood on mandatory toothbrushing, and he said, oh, my staff has had lots of experience hiding in people's bathrooms late at night to make sure they brushed. It's like, okay.
Wow.
Or I asked Lamar Alexander a question one time, and he responded and he answered, why, yes, Vermin, I do have Elvis Presley imprisoned underneath the governor's mansion of Tennessee for committing heinous acts.
Wow.
Once again, I prompted the question, but they responded and they added their own little twist to make it a little, you know, enlightening. You know, they're showing more of a subtext than they might if they were giving a straight answer to a straight question.
Like they're kind of like in a weird way illuminating whatever the metaphor of their existence is, you know, like, yeah, does he have Elvis trapped? But in a weird way, we all find ourselves sort of, whether you like it or not, under the spell of these people who've collaborated. It's a coven of people in suits who are very convincing and very easy to believe. If you're lazy, you know, it's easy, like, for some reason they're so sincere, and I get drawn into it all the time.
I've tried to eliminate, you know, the fact is the emperor has no clothes, but he could kill you with absolute impunity.
Yes.
And get away with it.
Yes.
And that's the thing that, I mean, I look at, you know, people look and they it's a frightening reality, but it's absolutely ludicrous.
Right.
And just that contrast is ridiculous.
Do you, have you ever looked, sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. I guess
the
I
fact
was
that the fact that
I'm an anarchist. I believe I've always been an anarchist ever since I made that conscious decision to be so, and I don't believe in the government's authority, and I believe that I have found a way to operate that makes it very clear, and in many circumstances does indeed deny authority to authority figures.
Can you define for us anarchism? Would you mind defining your anarchy for us?
Well, for me, anarchism is a belief that the government's claim of power over us is illegitimate, and that authority, by its nature, is coercive.
Yeah,
and they are using their self-imposed pretend authority, but they back it up with this threat of violence.
Yes.
And I believe in mutual aid as opposed to the government organization and structure. I've always believed that the only way to be able to extricate ourselves from the government is through mutual aid and voluntary cooperation.
Wow.
To replace the functions of the government, if you will. I mean, when the government tries to, say, you know, alleviate poverty or something like that, you know, it requires taking all sorts of money and then running it through a bureaucracy in a very inefficient way that has all sorts of conditions on it that ultimately has incredible, amazing, unintended consequences. And it seems that it's just true of a lot of the things that the government attempts to do.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The new year means new health goals, not just for your body, but for your finances too. But did you know financial health is directly related to identity protection? You need LifeLock because your personal info is in endless places that are outside of your control. It only takes one mistake, and not even your mistake, to expose you to identity theft and lost funds. LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialists will fix it, backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your subscription money back. Don't face drained accounts, fraudulent loans, or other financial losses from identity theft alone. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Do you see that bureaucratic... Do you see that matrix or whatever, the thing that philanthropy or love, if like we're going to say like mutual aid, we're going to have to use symbols for it. In the world we're in right now, we've got money. Sometimes it's just giving someone money or food or giving someone something that they can use to survive. But when you run it through that system you're talking about, it somehow becomes corrupt. And I sometimes when I'm really feeling it's, out there, is it a demonic force? Do you play around with the idea that that bureaucratic system is a kind of congealed demonic force?
I don't think so. I hate to say talk about demons as if though they are real. I don't even know if an institution itself is necessarily evil, but it's certainly not productive, or as productive as it would like to be. But yes, it is sort of, I often talk about spiritual money laundering, in a sense. And I think that when the government takes the money and launders it, they're laundering it in a dirty way. But if you take money and you spend it directly on good acts, then that's a good laundering. At the Rainbow Gatherings, for example. Are you familiar with the Rainbow Gatherings?
Yeah, a little bit, only from stories from people who've been. I have yet to attend one.
I think you'd like it. And of course, we're talking about the Rainbow Family of Living, Love, and Light annual gathering of the tribes. It's a very large, I would loosely use the word hippie quotation mark event to describe it, although all walks of life attend. It happens once a year, usually around the first week of July. And you could get up to 10,000 people in the woods, in a national forest, out in the middle of nowhere. Picture, if you will, 3,000-4,000 people sitting in concentric circles in a large field in the middle of nowhere, in a meadow. All of a sudden, out of the tree line comes dozens of people bringing 5-gallon buckets full of food. These people in the circles have their cups and their bowls because that's the tradition, and the people start going around and doling out food, which comes from over 100 different little kitchens up in the woods that are across between Gilligan's Islands and the Flintstones, as far as technology. And during this time, the food goes around. Town criers go around the circle, letting people know safety information or parking information or things they need to know. And other town criers are going around talking about where the drum circle is that night, or where the talent show is that night, or the happen spots are. And also going around that circle is the magic hat. And the magic hat goes around because it's a magic hat. And because the Rainbow Gathering is a non-commercial event, because you can't buy anything, you can't sell anything, you can barter. But ultimately, the only legitimate place to put money is in the magic hat. It's a non-commercial event. So people put it in, and then it gets spiritually laundered. It goes to the banking council. Banking council says, hey, we made X amount of dollars. The next morning, all the kitchen representatives come together and they have a spokes council, and everybody puts out their shopping list and they give it to supply, and the supply council interface with the banking council, and they go to town and bring it all back, and it goes over and over every night. And there's miles and miles of water pipes and like, There's a million things that need to get done. Vegetables need to be chopped. Fires need to be built. Stoves need to be built. Biscuits need to be made. Shitters need to be dug. Yeah. Health and safety, all these things. And the only reason that any of those things happen is because people see a need for them to happen, and they come together in a council, non-hierarchical form, and make that happen. Once again, not opposed to leaders. Anarchy is not opposed to leaders. If somebody has a specific skill set that other people need and want to learn from, that person could become a de facto leader. But once everybody has that information, there is no need for that leader any longer. And so the Rainbow Gatherings, I've been attending them for close to 30 plus years, me and my wife. And it is where I learned clowning when I was a young person, when I was a young rainbow. And I would go from end to end of camp to every camp and do something funny and push the limits of what I could do because it's they're so loose there. And I polished MC skills doing talent shows and gong shows and all of those things. And then after several years, I discovered the need for security. And we provide security. It's called Shantaisena. It's a cultural appropriation of the Sanskrit word meaning peacekeepers. But I started to bring my clowning into that. And essentially, it's a glorified camp counselor, really. But it also has crisis intervention, because anything could happen at Rainbow, you know, and we don't rely on the police. I mean, if it's a neighborhood situation, if it's in a camp, ideally the camp takes care of it.
Right.
If it affects the bigger crowd, if it's somebody peddling bad drugs, we have to track that down and put a stop to it. Right. You know, if there's an assault or something. And so we have our own restorative justice counsels that we'll offer to people who are wronged. One of the things that we also provide is escorts for the media and police, not sexual escorts, but escorts with the with the cops to make sure that, you know, they don't get in trouble, to make sure that the participants in the gathering don't get in any trouble. So early on, I was finding myself walking for like 8-hour shifts with 10 Alabama state troopers, for example, or a whole bunch of feds or a whole bunch of county cops. And they come in and they're propagandized. They are told that these are the worst people in the world. They're a bunch of drug addicts and they're going to, and all this bullshit. And so I would walk with them and propagandize them and contextualize what they were seeing and have fun with them and make fun of them and warn the participants that, we yell out six up means the cops are on their way, hide your drugs and leash your dogs and put some clothes on or whatever.
But the cops tolerated that. I'm sorry. The when you do this, patrol with them, how do you infiltrate? Like, how do they let you, it feels like some police would be like, what are you, you can't even walk with us.
Well, essentially, it's, you know, it's a public event. It is in public forest. The police are public servants. And once again, it's understanding that we have rights to do that.
Right.
To communicate with them.
Right.
Sometimes it's more tense. I mean, there's been events where the Rainbow Gathering was the largest single civil disobedience on the North American continent that year, because the feds have been trying to put permit schemes in forever to tell us that we need permits. And that we have always maintained no one can sign on our behalf. You can't represent me. I'm not giving you permission to do that. And so anybody who signed the permit was fraudulent from the get go. And we've proved that in court.
See, to me, you seem to be the embodiment of a potential future for humanity. And I don't mean to sound all thick and schmaltzy with that either. I mean, you know, my encounter is a little over the top there, but my encounter with this sort of thing at the burn, which there seems to be some parallel there. Not completely the same, but a parallel.
There is.
It feels to me that it. Whenever I go there, I think this is a way humans can be. Like, this is another possibility that is so different than the possibility most of us are born into. That it.
Do you find the burn totally decadent now? I was.
What's that?
I mean, is it? It is not the burn pretty decadent?
Well,
it seems like an event of decadence.
It's so big that what's so wonderful about it is in its size, there's the possibility for maximum hedonism, decadence, maximum whatever you want. What's beautiful about it is it has within it its own anarchic spirit and a similar thing. Though they don't really, there are permits to be able to use that land, unfortunately. And, every trouble that springs up, and just like I'm sure the Rainbow Gatherings, you know, you can expect trouble to spring up. It's just the nature of things. But those troubles, the burn, they really do try to, they have people who are actual peacekeepers who come to a camp and really try to calm people down. Try to do thing to keep someone from getting arrested because there's cops there, you know. So, but what I'm saying is, in that state, and of seeing that possibility. What you're talking about sounds like a more magnified version of it. I think so.
And because it's and there's no gate, you know, we have a front gate and all, but because it's pretty much open to anyone, and it attracts so many different types of people.
Yeah.
It's really a wonderful thing. I hope to make it to the Burn.
Oh, you got it. You would love it. And you would be familiar with it to some degree, and you would probably have a lot to offer it.
Yeah. I'm waiting for one of the corporate camps to make me their dancing monkey.
Those corporate camps, man. And then, you know, but then that's always the drama there is you get these these camps that, you know, one of the camps, I can't remember the name of it now, White Ocean or something, it got terrorized. They dumped out their portageons, dumped out their water. There was so many factions of burners there that you get these little cold or hot wars that can spring up. It's fascinating. But what I was trying to say is, to me, when I'm seeing you, I'm thinking that is a person who is brilliant and who is in this. Whenever I think of when we think of nonviolence, you know, there's visions that come to mind. And certainly for most of us, those visions probably don't involve somebody wearing a boot hat. But, you know, but when I see you, I see that. I see it's nonviolent. It's this beautiful form of nonviolent activism that has now. It's nice to hear that it has its roots in a real legitimate lineage, an anarchic lineage that the Rainbow Gathering.
My friend, attorney Jerry Boyle out of Chicago, who works with the NLG, has mentioned it's disarming. You know, I am disarming the police. And, you know, he gives a workshop, actually, on disarming the police, which all the militants are like, ooh! But it's really about disarming them in another way.
And in that disarming that you're doing, I think it shines a light on, whether you like it or not, the humanity of all of us. When I'm seeing you interact with the Trumpets or the Clintonites or whoever it is, and I see that they can't help but smile. They're offended by you and threatened by you, but they're smiling at the same time. And somewhere in that, to me, that's where the rubber hits the road for all of us witnessing it. Because in those little flickers of human interaction, we're no longer separate. And I'm really having heard that you have your roots in the Rainbow Gathering. It makes me interested in what your other wisdom streams are.
What type of? Pardon? I'm sorry.
I'm curious. What are your other wisdom streams? What are your other sources of inspiration? I hear that an entire community of people has infused you, I think, with some of their magic. Are there other infusions come?
Yes, I'd say along the way, for sure. I cut my teeth on anti-nuclear activism. When I was a younger person, I lived in Baltimore, Maryland, and was involved in the indie music and art weirdo scene. That's definitely a place where I learned to be weird. And I guess when I was younger than that, I guess psychedelic drugs sort of also allowed me to become the person that I have become, giving me this understanding of, you know, reality and being able to step outside or next to or through reality and being able to manipulate it slightly by having this understanding of my relationship with the real world at any given moment in time. And of course I became Vermin Supreme when I was doing bookings and promotions down in nightclubs in Baltimore. Early on, it was more all booking agents, all club owners, all promoters were vermin, and I was the Vermin Supreme. I didn't really have it in me, I'm afraid, and didn't last very long, but it was super, super fun. And it was a great time back in the day. It was just a short leap to all politicians are vermin and becoming the Vermin Supreme. And, you know, I started I actually ran for mayor of Baltimore, Maryland, in a fairly unreal way in 1987. And it wasn't particularly political. There was just something that seemed interesting to do. It was a project. And I did a month-long drug study as a lab rat for one of these drug testing companies up in Massachusetts here. And then went to Baltimore and ran this campaign just for the sheer lulls.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money. But nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
SpinQuest Social Casino. The new year may be coming to an end, but the excitement never does on SpinQuest.com. With live blackjack, craps, and so many slots, and jackpots that don't need a countdown. Your New Year's resolution is more fun on SpinQuest.com. New year and new players right now get $30 coin packs for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And I was in Baltimore and ready to move on from Baltimore. There's a lot of things that were happening that I will not bore you with. But one day, this was a couple weeks after I had read an article in the Mother Jones magazine, and it was an article describing a march that was called the Global Peace March for Global Nuclear Disarmament that was marching from LA to DC to protest nuclear weapons. And David Mixer, this Democratic political operative, it was his idea, and he was really over the top about it, and was, you know, having custom tents made up and custom milk crates made up, and just his vision was this big white bread march across the country with everybody being very cushy and cozy. And it collapsed under its own weight. Mm. It made it as far as Barstow, California, before it totally fell apart.
Oh, man.
And I felt like, oh, that's really sad. That's disappointing, because it sounded like such a nice thing. It inspired me. And then 2 weeks after I read that article, one of my roommates came home and said, hey, meet so-and-so. This guy's with the Great Peace March. And I'm like, what? Mm. And the march had continued. It only partially collapsed in Barstow, but a whole group of anarchists were like were disabling the vehicles so that the repo men could not take them away.
Wow.
They were committing a civil disobedience, lying down in front of and locking themselves to in order to keep the equipment from being taken away. And so this, although the article made it sound like it did not go any further, it actually did. And by the time it arrived in Baltimore, it was 5,000 strong. And they had they had the equipment that was needed to make that safe move down the road. There was water trucks. There was kitchen trailer trucks. There was kitchen prep trucks. There was porta potty trucks. There was porta potty pumper trucks. There were school buses that were acting as classrooms for all the kids that were on their march. They had semi-trailer trucks hauling the two milk crates that each marcher was given that they could for their possessions, and all the tents. And every night they would set up camp, and they would have this consensus council, a non-hierarchical circle decision making, essentially an anarchistic organism in a way, much like the Rainbow Gathering is. It's not top down. It's horizontal.
Yeah.
And so when I saw this in Memorial Stadium, I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is totally it. I'm on board. I went to the thrift store. I bought a shitty sleeping bag and a couple changes of clean clothes. And I walked with them to D.C. several days and met some of these people, some of these anarchists, these activists. They threw their tennis shoes that they'd crossed the country over the White House fence. They were committing civil disobedience. There were concerts. There was parties. It was amazing. And I heard that they were going to continue. And this small group of some of the logistical support people wanted to continue this sort of mobile protest. And they formed a group called the Seeds of Peace. And I quickly joined them and started marching with them. We did a 300-mile march in Florida from Kingsville, Georgia, where they had the Trident D5 missiles in the sub base there, down to Cape Canaveral, where they were testing them at the time. And so, and they infiltrated. They did backcountry actions at Cape Canaveral to prevent the and make the whole thing be put on hold for a little bit. And so this was what I was finding to be very inspiring. And then went to a march in Michigan where I met this peace marcher hippie woman that I just thought was going to be a hookup, but we've been together for 30 years. And then there's another march in Massachusetts. And it was at that time that I started to attend the Rainbow Gatherings. And so, we were at the Nevada nuclear test site where we would have thousands, literally thousands of people camping out in the desert outside of Vegas, infiltrating, doing backcountry actions, doing massive civil disobedience. I mean, literally one weekend, like probably 2,000 to 3,000 arrests of people walking into the desert to try and stop the nuclear testing.
Is that a backcountry? Is that what a backcountry action is? Is just trespassing, or
there's like your simple symbolic trespass where you might cross. We would cross the cattle guard there, or you might cross a border or enter property. You know, that's sort of a simple trespassing. But a backcountry action is when you sort of go on a serious hike and try and not, you're not giving yourself up easily. You're trying not to be detected. Whereas a basic, simple, symbolic trespass might involve, blocking a street or something else that's, just very obvious. Yeah. But a backcountry action is like, it's secret. It's backcountry. It's they're trying not to be detected until they unfurl their banner or lock themselves to something or what have you.
How many times have you been arrested?
So amazingly few for the situations I put myself in. A handful. And when I've been arrested at demonstrations, it's usually been a false arrest ultimately, and I've been able to sue them for a little bit of money.
What?
I've been arrested. We bought a fifth of an acre little slice down in Hawaii with a $6,000 settlement from the LAPD because they wanted to arrest me because I was singing Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Sesame Street, These Are the People in Your Neighborhood, but really trying to talk to the arrestees about the lawyers waiting to communicate with them. And when you start talking about the commanding officer and you start talking, you start trying to get the line cops to question their commanding officer's decisions to put them in certain situations, you can be pretty much pretty sure you're going to be shut down pretty quick. That's been my experience.
Wow. I got to ask you this. And listening to your story, it fills me with a kind of surreal hope. But I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase the question. In this thing that you're talking about, this sort of, I don't know what it is, it flowers up, this thing there that is called anarchism, which a lot of people think of. When they think of it, they think of what the state has told them it is. It's things breaking and smashing and falling apart. I think probably a lot of people are surprised when they hear that the practice of it involves mutual aid and selflessness and
absolutely
giving.
Anarchy is a very high level of order. I mean, it's the natural order that occurs in the absence of the state. Right after a natural disaster, before the state can get there, the people immediately come together. The people immediately start helping one another, helping survivors, clearing the roads.
Right.
That is anarchy.
So what, how big is it? Because I think there's something beautifully invisible about this anarchy and decentralization in general. You know, centralization, anytime you have some leader that is, you know, that isn't just some temporary leader, like teaching people how to cook or whatever, but a leader, it's easy to like sort of trace the structure. With anarchism, it's different in the sense that it's a real thing. I mean, these flowers or whatever you want to call it, these communities blossom.
It happens day to day. It's a beautiful thing.
How big is it? If you had to guess, and I'm sorry if it's a dumb question, like you represent, there's for every vermin supreme, a celebrity, forgive me if that's an insulting term. I mean it in the best way possible. Someone to be celebrated.
Now that I'm on Cameo, it's official.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. I told Cameo, I told them I'd do it for $50 million.
Right. You could do that.
I don't want to waste my time with a great high magician by talking about Cameo.
I do have an institute that I'm trying to finance. The vermin. We have a vermin institute now.
Here's the question, though. Here's my question. For every one of you, there's a lot of people, and you were kind of mentioning them, the other activists, the people who show up to these things while all of us are tweeting. And from that, you must have gotten some approximation of a kind of decentralized movement happening in the world. And I'm wondering if you could give either pop that balloon of hope that I have, where I love to fantasize about some decentralized, beautiful anarchic revolution that's happening right now and think that it's massive. But is it what I think it is? Is it possible that there's a lot of you out there do it at different levels of society working your magic in different ways?
Well, I think there is. I think there's so many people who are involved in so many projects. I mean, that we don't even have a grasp on it. I guess it depends how you wanted to define it, but I really like to think so. I mean, I don't think it's a huge percentage of the population. I really have absolutely zero way of fully guessing, quite frankly. So I don't want to lead you on, but yes, the anarchist revolution is right on schedule and we are winning. Ponies will be here soon. They're turning the corner. It's a happening thing for sure.
But I have to ask you, I'm sorry if I'm shotgunning you or machine gunning you or violently, aggressively asking you questions. I just feel like I have a limited amount of time. When I've seen any video of you, and even now briefly on our failed Zoom, you just seem filled with love. And I'm just wondering, like, what are you getting your instructions from? Like, where is your inspiration coming from? What's compelling you to do this, to put yourself in danger to do this? Because to me, it doesn't just seem like some kind of like, it does seem like performance art and in a beautiful way, but it doesn't seem limited to that. Do you feel, for lack of a better word, called by something or compelled by something? And if so, what is that thing?
Well, I do feel compelled, I guess, to state my views, maybe, to exercise my First Amendment rights of free speech and assembly. And I believe that I've simply developed a communication strategy that has allowed me to do so successfully, that has allowed me to amplify that free speech in a way that I couldn't ever imagine. When I first became a meme, when I first went viral back in 2012, when I was at that panel at the lesser known candidate debates and dumped the glitter on Randall Terry, who's sort of a terrible person.
Amazing.
Nice. Yeah. you know, because it was perceived to be a critique, an overall critique of the system, and it wasn't partisan. It wasn't attacking one party. It wasn't attacking one particular politician. And therefore, it was sort of embraced across the political spectrum. And so now I have people who enjoy what I do, appreciate it, or support it. And I feel my relationship to my fan supporters, however, they're my constituents. And I believe that in a way, you know, I'm representing them. I'm not representing them in any official capacity, but I believe because they enjoy it, they get a kick out of it, a thrill out of it. And they may not be able to do it. They may not be in a position to do so. They might not feel comfortable or have the chops or whatever. And I have this total random DNA toss and a set of experiences that have all been building blocks. I mean, I look back and it seems like it's a skill set, but it's all been each and every skill sort of built up on the one past to become this force that can be very effective.
Yes. Well, look, I don't mean to do an ambush now, but I have to ambush you, Vermin Supreme. And forgive me for this, but many of us want to know, where are you getting all the ponies?
Well, yes, of course. There'll be a whole class of ponies that are cloned, they'll be known as clonies, of course. We're going to have a massive forced in vitro fertilization test tube pony program where we will be implanting ponies into all sorts of mammals, mammals you might not even think about. We don't know about if the humans are going to be suitable for carrying ponies, but I know many, many women would happily carry ponies to full term.
What women do you know? No woman wants to have a pony inside of her. It's dangerous. What you're suggesting is dangerous.
I'm speaking allegorically, metaphorically. Literally, perhaps. If the state were to force them to do so, I know they would do so happily.
Where do we keep them? Plan, I must say this, in all fairness, everybody wants...
Where are the free ponies coming from? Where are you going to get the free ponies? What are the free ponies going to cost? They're going to cost nothing. They're free ponies. Where do free ponies come from? Let me tell you, Duncan.
Thank you.
When a boy pony meets a girl pony.
Yeah.
And they like one another.
Yeah.
They might want to get to know each other a little bit better. So they'll, trot along, gallop off to the paddock corner or something. And especially if the female pony is in heat or estrus, as it is called. And so the boy pony gets really excited and gives the girl pony a special pony hug, mounting the girl pony. And then the excited boy pony, this big giant pony cock comes out of its sheath and inserts into the girl pony's pony vagina. And they start going, making love would be a much better.
Yes, keep going, would be please. Keep going.
And so the pony penis during the lovemaking session ejaculates. Probably gallons of pony sperm right on up into the girl pony's reproductive organs, swims up the fallopian tube, meets the sperm meets the egg, and they start dividing. And 11 months later, boom, free pony comes out.
Well, that's where, to me, not trying to poke holes in it. I'm sorry to off here, but listen, number one, you're talking about the possibility of this kind of spontaneous pony romance among so many pony couples, enough to give a pony to everybody. Number two,
boner. Did I mention the phrase pony boner?
Yeah, you're talking about hard throbbing pony cocks, but I'm saying
We could say member if that was more appropriate.
Member cocks, glistening, dripping, powerful pony cocks. But what I'm saying to you is where yes, do we put yes, all sir. The where do the ponies go? Your plan is extra? Untenable. There's too many people in this country. There's not enough room for all those extra ponies.
That's that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You are like one of those naysayers. I see. But the thing to understand about a pony-based economy is that it will be part of a massive rebuilding. It's sort of the original Green New Deal when you get right down to it, because it's going to be a huge restructuring. I mean, okay, you're driving down the road. All you have to do is imagine that it's all ponies. I mean, it's really simple. It takes a little longer, but I mean, essentially they're clean, they're green. That in conjunction with the zombie power plants, of course. We want that's part of the package. But ultimately, people are the trades are going to go wild. What is going to do for the economy as we rebuild the entire infrastructure of the United States, where every homeowner and every apartment dweller, you know, we have needs to have a place for that pony. And so that is really part of it. It's a massive jobs creation program.
I feel like you have identified a need, which is a real human, legitimate human need. We all do want a pony. You'd have to be a maniac or some broken thing to not want a beautiful pony playing in your yard, enjoying itself under the summer sun.
Frolicking.
Thank
pony
you.
To love.
Yeah.
Braid their hair.
Comb.
Be your companion.
Shampoo.
Yes.
But I think there's a seduction in what you're saying. And I think it's,
Duncan,
you know, if
what would you braid your pony?
Oh, God. Probably a Lady Di.
Or what are you going to name your pony? I'm sorry. I put it sort of weird.
There we go. Woo! Kind of slipped out, didn't it? See, that's what I'm saying. You know, Mike, I've got a beautiful son, another son on the way. And if I listened to you, I would bank that these two children would enjoy a pony thanks to your reign. But
Are you sure your wife is not carrying a pony?
What are you saying? Wait a minute. What are you trying to say?
I was curious if you'd seen the ultrasound.
I haven't been able to go because of COVID. I haven't been able to see the ultrasounds. Do you know my wife?
Say she could be carrying a pony.
Do you know my wife?
I mean, I'm not saying that. That she would carry a pony, or that she's not carrying a human baby either. I'm just saying.
Well, she has been a little hoarse lately. I'm sorry.
Why the long face?
Oh my God. Vermin supreme.
But, okay. You know, the thing you need to understand about a pony-based economy, okay, number one, when we have universal pony ownership, we will have equity in the ponies, because you have equity in something you own. So we have created pony equity, number one. Now, once you have equity in something, you can borrow against it. So you will be able to borrow against the equity that you have in your pony. Yes, that's right. We are creating pony-based debt.
That's a
now,
bubble.
Now, once you've created an entire class of debt, and oh, we'll get to that. It is at that point that you can turn it into a very important financial instrument where we will bring in the bestest and the brightest of all the Ivy Leagues to create incredibly opaque, hard to understand, impossible financial instruments. And once we have, troubled pony assets, all that stuff, quantitative pony easings, all that stuff. And yes, sir, we are going to create a bubble in the economy. Now, of course, a bubble, the thing about a bubble is it's an amazing thing to have in your economy. It means that your economy is firing on all cylinders. Yeah. People are making money hand over fist. It's amazing. Now, of course, as you might point out, yes, bubbles tend to burst. But let me assure you, Mr. Trussell,
please,
that this particular pony debt based bubble is going to be steel belted, reinforced, and lasts forever.
I love that. I want to believe you, and I feel myself somehow believing you more and more. Do I understand some of the terms you're using? No, but you know, I'm just a podcaster. I don't get into big financial stuff like you clearly have. But to me, I do feel like one thing that you are overlooking, and in this day where we are seeking to have a Earth not slowly heating up because of carbon emissions, you have not answered what we're going to do with those pony farts in this utopia that you are that you are, this story that you're telling, this thing that to me seems like a beautiful pipe dream.
Unemployment. There will be zero unemployment. The
pony farts. What do we do with them? What do you do with the methane?
Sir, it's been taken care of. And in fact, this really crosses over into real world, because if you Google up methane capture cows, if you Google a little bit, you will see that scientists are working on this problem in the real world, and that they have devised contraptions that actually capture methane gas from the gut of cows. Once again, it's a prototype. It's easily transferable to ponies.
So what do you do with all the? What are you going to do with all the farts? Like, if you're suggesting we breed as so many poodles and then we collect their.
You're gonna use it. It will light your lamps at night so you can read.
Now that actually is a beautiful thing. When I see the lights of my home or my studio where I'm at right now, I know it probably comes from. I don't know what it comes from now that I think about it, but to look up at my lights and think, that's the glow of a alchemized pony fart. That's beautiful.
Much better than nuclear waste or coal ash or however they get it these days. I don't know. It's gasoline. It's crazy. It's unsustainable. That's all I know.
I thought I was going to take you down today with the pony question, but I can see that I underestimated
you. Most people really agree with the pony platform as a ponynomics and all that. The problem that they often have is with the secret dental police kicking down your door at 3 a.m. to make sure you've brushed and all that. And the dental reeducation centers and the preventative dental maintenance detention facilities and the government issued toothpaste containing an addictive yet harmless substance. And, the DNA gene splicing to create a race of winged monkeys to act as tooth fairy enforcers.
No, that all sounds great to me. Reasonable. You know, the way I look at that is if you haven't done anything wrong, why should you be afraid of police? I don't even know if that's the right word for it. Well-intended friends kicking down your door. Why'd you lock it in the first place? What are you hiding to get you to do what is, as far as I'm concerned, the healthiest thing you can do, which is keep those teeth clean? So to me, the only thing I have a problem with in your plan is the ponies. I keep my door open. I keep my door open at night. I'm up here in the mountains of North Carolina. I keep it open. The house is a little cold, in the hopes that a police officer will come in and remind me if I haven't brushed my teeth. Or what?
Maybe a pony will walk in. A pony.
Oh God! What a great night that would be.
Or maybe a bear. Do you have bears in North Carolina?
We do. Crawling with bears.
Never had one.
Haven't had a bear.
What about raccoons? Raccoons must walk in your house.
Yeah, we're plagued with the raccoon infestation. They get in the walls. There's a lot of things in our house that have gotten into the walls. They don't hang out, thank God, in the shared communal family space. But at night, it's rough to hear the skittering of raccoons in the walls. They purr. Did you know raccoons purr?
I know they hiss when I catch them in the kitchen. They hiss and growl, but I've never heard them purr.
They purr once they get in the walls. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I guess they just feel happy in the interior of a house.
They're big. How can they fit in your wall?
I don't know.
Are you sure they're not some sort of spirit? Are you sure they're not spirits of some sort?
Oh no, they're raccoons. I could see them through some of the holes in the walls. I think that's how they get in there. Could be anything, you know. Usually it happens when I'm not home. But regardless,
we have squirrels in the walls, but squirrels are small. That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
They must have very big walls.
I don't know how they're surviving in there. It's like confusing to me. We had an electrician come by because we had a very high power bill, and he said it's probably the raccoons sucking the energy out of your walls.
Well, that is a serious concern. I mean, when I live with the squirrels, I freak out because if they start chewing through your wires, that is not a safe thing.
Well, a lot of people think that they're chewing through your wires, but really what they're probably trying to do is milk the energy. They're trying to get in there and suckle at them.
Energy vampire raccoons.
You know, the vampire word is, you know, I don't know if they're vampires, but I do know that
they're energy vampires, man. They're, you know, they're like this people suck the energy and interesting.
Well, they purr. Very interesting. I mean,
but they don't want you to pet them.
I never thought of that.
Have you ever petted a raccoon?
Hell no. I tried. I reached through the hole in the wall, bit my hand. Hissed. Never thought of it that way.
Did you get the rabies there? Did you get the rabies shots?
Yeah, no, I had rabies for a few weeks. It was fucking horrible. To have rabies and COVID simultaneously, it wasn't a great couple of weeks.
Oh, man. Joe Jorgensen got hit by a bat there. That was terrible.
Yeah, bats have or not do like bats need a new publicist right now because they've got a really bad rap these days. I just want to thank you so much for being on this show, and I just really appreciate the work that you're doing out there. I'm gonna vote for you whatever you run or do, I'll vote for you. I want my door kicked in. I want you to be our leader, our great, powerful leader. I'm tired of this non-pony life. Can you let my other listeners, who I guarantee are hitting
it? He'd be a tolerable strong man if he had the fucking ponies, but no.
Trump?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the lack of ponies that took him down. You know what? What are we going to do? It's not our fault. He should have put some ponies in the White House. Should have had any one pony, and he would have probably won against Biden.
He had his chance. He could have been dictator for life if he had the proper ponies backing him, but no, his fault.
Yeah, it's his
fault. Not my reality. Fucko. If I say we can create our own reality, and I like doing just that. Hey, have you read my book, iPony, Blueprint for a New America, by any chance?
No, sir. I have yet to read that.
All right. I'm going to see if my people will send you a copy. It's a book about life in the future, long after a vermin supreme presidency, after everybody has their pony, after zombie power fuels the nation, and after the secret dental police have set up checkpoints every couple hundred yards. It is a warning from the people of the future to you, the people of their past, your present, that vermin supreme is a madman and must be stopped. It's available at iponybook.com. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if you're a madman, then you're the madman we need. And the people, you know what?
It doesn't play out. It only plays out in the future. I'm doing everything that I can do to prevent myself from getting elected president for that very reason, because I've traveled to the future. It's a crazy dystopic thing with but it's okay. Sorry.
Well, just don't. I know. All you got to do is don't run. If you don't want it to happen, why do you keep running? You keep running and running. Why do you keep doing it?
Because it would be too easy not to.
You are truly the devil, Vermin Supreme. And we love you. How can people find you? And thank you for doing this show.
Well, thank you. Well, I am on the internet. That's a fact. But you can go to verminsupreme.com. You can go to verminsupremeinstitute.com, which is it's an interesting spinoff of my campaign. As you know, I ran for the nomination of the Libertarian Party last year, and it was pretty crazy. It was the first thing I'd ever done like that, quite frankly. I mean, 30 years of this fictitious campaign gave me enough notoriety to actually run a real campaign. And that demanded certain things. It included developing a campaign team and a campaign staff. And I attracted all these amazing political operative libertarian types from the left and from the right. And they became, I mean, they almost got me the nomination. But after Joe Jorgensen got the nom, they wanted to continue. They wanted to continue working this messaging of love, compassion, mutual aid, with this vermin absurdity angle, and we tried to figure out what to do and how to do that, and we came up with this idea of the Vermin Supreme Institute. Actually, it's just Vermin Supreme Institute. The is implied, but I'd like to give you the two sentence mission of statement.
Thank you.
Our purpose is to inspire social evolution through the disruption of authoritarianism, to promote compassionate activism, and to spread knowledge of redacted history through the use of humor, direct action, and mutual aid. We uplift the disaffected, disenfranchised, and disempowered. And we are doing just that. And it's a beautiful thing because we got like various departments. We have an education department. We have a public works project trying to do mutual aid, doing mutual aid projects, and disrupt the vote. So we're doing politics too, helping anti-duopoly candidates. And it's an amazing thing because I sort of brought my thing to a certain point, and all these amazing people are bringing it to even greater heights. And now it's becoming a truly collaborative project, which is sort of,
wow,
it's odd, having to give up, willingly giving up a certain amount of control in order to see it pushed into a levels that it just hasn't seen, that I couldn't bring it to.
And isn't that fascinating that even as an anarchist, it's hard for you to let go of wanting to be in control?
I guess. Well, it's not. I just never had the opportunity not to be in control, I guess. But now it just works. So many people are still willing and working on different parts of it. So VerminSupremeInstitute.com. That is totally that. Of course, I did mention Cameo for $25. I'll say whatever you want. I'll be your monkey on the internet. Cameo.com/VerminSupreme.
Nice.
I've got one of those Patreons. I want to call it Patron all the time, but it's Patreon, I think. .com/VerminSupreme, and that of course gives people special access, stuff I don't give away for free, people. So there is that, and that's sort of fun. Let's see what else. On the Facebook, I'm Vermin Supreme with the blue check mark. Also a Vermin Supreme without the blue check mark, but whatever. On TikTok.
You're on TikTok?
At the real Vermin Supreme. Oh, yeah, it's wild. I'm like the voice of a new generation or something. During the campaign, we were going viral on TikTok, and the Vermin Supreme hashtag has something like 14 million hits.
Wow. Wow. You deserve it. Vermin Supreme, you're a wizard. We all know it.
If hits were ponies, it would be sure. But.
Yeah, well, one day they might be. That could be your next move.
True.
We're going to help you. Everybody, please. Connect to this. You know, all this time I've been doing the podcast, I've been trying to have a wizard of this stature on, and I got lucky. Thank you for all of you who made it happen. I feel so lucky to have gotten to make your acquaintance, and I'm very inspired by you. All the links you need to connect to Vermin Supreme will be at DuncanTrussell.com if you don't remember them.
Okay.
And thank
awesome.
You. Thank you very much.
There's more, but I don't want to bore you with them.
Send me all your links. I'll populate as many pages as I have to with them. And thank you for doing what you do.
YouTube and oh, it's shit. Well, Mr. Trussell, I would like to say it has been a most certain pleasure.
Thank you.
It's been delightful. Look forward to any future projects that might manifest.
Let me know what I can do for you. I want to see you at the Rainbow Gathering. Okay. That would just be a blast.
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I meant to mention that I've been arrested more at Rainbow Gatherings than any other place.
Makes sense. I mean, that makes sense. If you really want to piss them off, do something like that. They just can't stand the idea of people doing concentric circles and sharing food.
Usually they're being dicks or something, and so I try and be distracting, and that gets me arrested, and then they drive me away and cut me loose, and... That works. And once again, I feel very comfortable when I have so many people watching my back. And I think that's what allows me to do a lot of what I do.
Yeah, you got a lot of people. You have many allies. I'm just so lucky because I had this show on Netflix, and I did enough podcasts that I get connected to people like you. And I just really just feel very grateful to you for your time, because I know you must be really busy. Let me know. Your people let me know how I can help in the future, and anything you need me to promote, I'll promote it at the beginning of the podcast so that it gets like the maximum energy. Just in any way that I can tweet for you or do anything for you, I really just want to be a part of what you're doing, because
I super appreciate that, and likewise also.
Thank you.
Because of course the name of the show is Cross Promotion with Vermin Supreme, and I'd like to thank you very much for coming on today.
Yeah. Cross promotion. Holy shit. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful evening, and tell your wife I said hi, and if my wife gives birth to a pony,
yes, sir. Likewise.
You'll be here to be my lawyer.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, friend.
Remember, together we will ride our ponies into a zombie-powered future.
Hallelujah! Vermin Supreme, everybody. Thank you, friend. That was Vermin Supreme. You can find him at verminsupreme.com. And a big thank you to all of our sponsors.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The new year brings new health goals and wealth goals. Protecting your identity is an important step. Your info is in endless places that could expose you to identity theft, leading to lost funds. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's restoration specialists will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Resolve to make identity, health, and wealth part of your New Year's goals with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
This is Julian Edelman from Dudes on Dudes with Gronk and Jules. Sunday mornings, I've got my game day ritual. Coffee, lucky socks, and now new morning Uncrustable sandwiches.
It's all about that 12-gram protein boost with the new Uncrustables Bright-Eyed Berry or Up and Apple flavors.
Bright-Eyed Berry's got a feisty receiver energy.
Up and Apple? Your classic do-it-all tight end.
Soft, pillowy, packed with protein, and easy enough for Gronk to grab from the freezer.
Whether you're on the couch, driving to the tailgate, or heading to the locker room, new morning Uncrustable sandwiches are the MVP of snacks.
Your new Sunday kickoff ritual starts here with new morning Uncrustable sandwiches packed with 12 grams of protein.